Joe Ostrowski. Nights on 670 The Score.
Rick Hahn, you know, just because he signed these players, he hasn't won anything yet. Everybody just needs to calm down.
0-2 to left and well hit. At the wall, it is gone.
Are you serious?
So you don't like it? So you think they've done a poor job with the rebuild?
Abreu drives that one toward left center field. On its way, and it is gone. By plenty, the MVP candidate, Jose Abreu, second home run for the White Sox. And they take a 3-0 lead.
Everybody just needs to calm down.
Joe Ostrowski.
If they don't like it, I don't really give a
Knights on 670 The Score.
Wait, they threw a lefty out there on purpose against the White Sox? Really? Everybody tells me he's a great manager over in Oakland. And everybody says. They did that on purpose. You have to win two games, Bob. Two. And it's done. Oh, man. I got to be honest. I was bouncing around the house knowing that we were getting playoff baseball this afternoon all day. I was singing Thunderstruck. And part of the reason is every day on during my show Bet Sweats at radio.com from 9 to 11 a.m. live, subscribe to the podcast, is we do a segment called Lightning Bets. And we all agreed, it was unanimous, which I thought was the kiss of death, that the play today is the White Sox playing Thunderstruck. Got hyped. We all bet on the White Sox, and the White Sox brought home a winner. How about Lucas Giolito today? All of them. Adam Engel. Why? They're playing Adam Engel? Well, look at that. The first run of the 2020 White Sox postseason. A solo shot off the bat of Adam Engel. Going yard. Three guys for the Sox. Abreu, Grandal. What a beautiful way to kick off the postseason. Joe Ostrowski with you. Full show this evening. I haven't done one of these in a while. Till 10 o'clock on Sports Radio 670, The Score. We'll be bouncing all around. There's so much to go over with that White Sox game from today. They go up 1-0, one more game, eliminate the Athletics. Let's move on to the next round and see who's next. I want to get into some Bears conversation because the more and more I thought about it, Matt Nagy is playing chess when everybody else in town is playing checkers. He really is. Like, when you go over the timeline, the way he played this quarterback change perfectly, man. Respect to Matt Nagy. I don't know if he's a great head coach, but I respect him for this move. And it's kind of like he's getting a start over too. Even though he was already coach of the year, it's like he's starting over. He has a competent quarterback under center as long as he can stay healthy. And of course, we'll preview that Cubs-Marlins series. David Ross had some interesting things to say. I want to bring that to you this evening. At 6:40, Josh Nelson from the Sox Machine will drop by. 7:20, Brad Spielberger from Pro Football Focus, also a big Bears fan, he'll drop by. Ben Heisler, a Chicago guy living in Kansas City. Yeah, we'll live vicariously through Ben. Talk about Mahomes, and he also covers betting, so I want to take a look at this Week 4 slate and what he thinks about the Bears-Colts game. Bears at home, they're 2.5-point underdogs against the Colts. Interesting matchup because the Bears have faced three soft defenses this year, three of the worst in the entire league. But when you look at what's happened, certainly this year, the Colts defense has turned things around. So it's going to be a tougher test for this Bears offense. Something else that I think Matt Nagy knew. Like, okay, we're going to play some real defense. I can't have Mitch Trubisky out there. Another reason he's playing chess. Get to that coming up. 8:20, Jay Zawoski will drop by. Did we learn anything from the Lightning winning the cup? And I want to let you know about the book he's written. And Score Rewind in the 9 o'clock hour. Sox fans, the floor is yours if you want to chime in. Because what you experienced today, it's been a while. Some of you younger Sox fans, you haven't seen that before. Not that you can remember. Your team playing in a playoff game. Got your ace on the mound, Lucas Giolito, and he, of course, did not disappoint. Amazing. Just amazing. No hitter, not broken up until the seventh inning. His line on the day, seven innings, one earned run, eight strikeouts for Ace. Any more questions about him being a number one starter in this league? Do we have to keep doing that? I'm hearing this morning some people say, well, you know, I don't know. Playing in Oakland, Lucas Giolito, no experience in the postseason. You can shove that narrative. That's done. Forget that. Giolito today,
It was the first time a pitcher was perfect through six in a postseason game since Mike Mussina in Game 1 of the 2004 ALCS against the Red Sox. How about that? Not throwing a no-hitter, just going six. Even though it's about pitching and defense in the playoffs. I mean, come on. You still need to hit a little bit. And that brings us to the White Sox lineup. Tim Anderson, 3-for-4. He'll talk it and he's going to back it up. Love it. Double and a run. Engel, Abreu, Grandal, all go deep. I mean, Engel, he had two extra base hits, which is so amazing. But the White Sox improve now to 15-0 against left-handed starting pitchers. 15-0. I don't want to hear anything about, well, they played the Central, they beat up on the Royals and the Tigers. 15-0 is no fluke. And when you start to break down those numbers, here's why it isn't lucky. You throw all the teams in the bucket, every team in baseball, not only just the playoff teams. When you break down the numbers and what they've done offensively this season, man, number one in slugging, number one in ISO power, number one in weighted runs created plus, number two in on-base percentage, number two in OPS with 891. How do you do that? And not only do you throw out a lefty against the White Sox, you throw out a 22-year-old puppy, a rookie. And we know about the Athletics' issues in the past in the playoffs here. So Lizardo last three, gives up three runs, six hits, two homers. That's ball game right there. And thankfully, the White Sox bullpen was able to finish the job as the Sox take a 1-0 lead in the series. Remember this year, with the different setup, that you need 13 wins. So it's one down and 12 more to go. But man, that was so much fun. Would love to hear about your experience today. Just being an excited White Sox fan right now. And now you've got Keuchel going up against Chris Bassitt tomorrow afternoon. Thanks, MLB, by the way. They decided to put basically the Cubs and Sox on at the same time. They're staggered by literally 1 hour, the start times. What a joke. I get it. Like, the A's and the Marlins aren't going to bring everybody in. But come on, this is the number three market. And we've got both fan bases very excited.
I have to say, I made one mistake.
By the way, there's no question that this is coming back. Like, they've already thrown it out there, and I don't have a problem with it. I thought I would, but I don't mind it. And yeah, I'm talking about this format, the playoff format. And they'll see how it goes with the best of three, but it's exciting immediately. Immediately. And you thought the one-game wild card? How about this with the best of three? And everybody's in. Everybody. And when you get a team like the Dodgers launched early or something like that, there's going to be people very upset. But baseball can be random as is once in a while. Now, we've had a nice run where it's mostly the best teams with the great hitting and the great pitching that have been winning World Series. I want to see how that plays out this year. But 312-644-6767, 312-644-6767. That's how you call in. Jordan Malley will pick up the phone. He'll throw you on the air. And you can also text the exact same number, 312-644-6767. You can reach me on Twitter at JoeO670, at JoeO670. Jordan, diehard White Sox fan. Man, how old were you in 2008?
I was a freshman in high school, so I was 15.
Like, you barely remember ever seeing the White Sox in the playoffs as a lifelong fan.
Back in 05, when they won the World Series, I remember standing in line for 3.5 hours to go see the World Series trophy after that. And I'll be honest with you, Joe, I love baseball growing up, but the Sox making that run in 05 really cemented it for me as being like all in on baseball growing up, all in on the White Sox, even after those bad years.
So, different experience you had to
to head to downtown early. You didn't want to miss any of the Sox game. So how was it for you actually seeing Giolito on the mound in game one of a series?
He's unbelievable, man. Like, just absolutely unbelievable. And you see what happens when you give your starter a little bit of cushion, especially early in the game, the way that they did with Engel, putting him on the board and starting off that way after this awful series against the Cubs to finish up the season. I mean, there's nothing better. So Giolito looked amazing today. Keuchel going tomorrow.
Yeah, and you've got to have a lot of confidence with all of his experience. And he's been talking about it this week. It's about pitching and defense. The offense is nice. And the other question here moving forward is, what's happening with Aloy? Now, obviously, they could win without Aloy, but you'd like to have that extra firepower here. He sat out today with the foot sprain that he's been dealing with. And they put him on the playoff roster. So they obviously think there's a chance that he's going to play at some point. Whether it's tomorrow and if there's a game on Thursday. So they said he felt discomfort working out this morning, and that's the reason he didn't play, and they ended up not needing him at all. But if they're going to make a deep run, they're going to need him at some point. Go ahead, Jordan.
I was going to say, you know, just I got a little bit of reassurance just seeing Adam Engel hit that home run today.
Oh, man.
And also hearing him to talk about how he doesn't want to fill the shoes of Eloy if this had happened over the weekend. He said, I have veteran presence now, and I'm just going to go in there and play my role and do my thing. And he's doing that. He's doing exactly that, so I feel comfortable with him out there.
Vince Texan at 312-644-6767. He says, I don't mind this playoff structure, but there has to be some incentives given to the teams who dominate the regular season. Yeah, it's a little bit different with the 60-game sprint that we're dealing with. But next year, if you move this forward, if you bring 16, and maybe it doesn't have to be 16. Maybe you can go in between. You can go with 14 teams, something like that. But yeah, what's the incentive? Like, there's not much of a difference. Okay, you get in as the 8th seed. Going up against one, okay. Now, we know next year there would be some sort of home field advantage. This is strange. If you go 3, it's all going to be played at one location. There's home field, but there's not really home field. There's no impact from the crowd. I mean, it means very, very little. And then the future series here, it's all going to be it's all set, the destinations. So it's going to be fascinating. You know, you have that intensity with postseason baseball returning. And all of us that are baseball fans, just a little bit, best time of the year. You love it. I mean, what's better than October baseball? I can't say it's the same, though. I don't think anybody's going to sit here and say that. It was thrilling to see the White Sox back in the game for the first time since 2008. And even though I'm one of those people that at times you get annoyed by the network, especially if it's Fox, how they zoom in on the same fans again and again, and they look for the people that are wearing their emotions on their sleeves and show them again and again, just freaking out over every little pitch. Kind of love it, but it's also a little bit too much at times. But you can't replace that. You just can't. I did miss a little bit of that today. And you wonder moving forward how that impact, you know, that's just completely gone. But hey, I mean, we've seen how many series when the road team just happens to be more comfortable. We saw it in the 2016 World Series. And they end up doing better. Sometimes you need to get out of your home park. I was there in the 2016 World Series. The one game that they did win there, and man, they just needed one, and you could feel that. Just get me one, because the pitching really lined up the rest of the way for 6 and 7. But just what Hawk would always talk about, tight sphincter during games, yeah, you could feel it at Clark and Addison for that game. If the rest of that series was played at Wrigley, I don't know if the Cubs are champions from that season. So it's interesting. One of the many different interesting things to take a look at with the 2020 postseason. But it's awesome that the White Sox are out to a 1-0 lead. Cubs get the Marlins. They're going to start that series tomorrow.
David Ross decides to go with Kyle Hendricks in game one of that set. I don't know that it's a big deal. We know that Darvish is the best pitcher, but how much does it really matter? They're both going to pitch. You're going to have at least two games, and maybe Darvish is out there for the clincher to wrap up the series in two. That's part of it, too. It could be the case. So we'll probably make a bigger deal out of it than it is. Like, if you're looking at the matchups, they're both going up against the Marlins lineup. So we'll see how that works out. Very interesting. But so many great things to discuss, including the 3-0 Bears. Josh Nelson will drop by at 6:40. Looking forward to discussing the White Sox with Josh, the host of the Sox Machine podcast. But also coming up next, I want to squeeze in a little bit of Bears conversation and tell you why I think that Matt Nagy is playing chess when everybody else is playing checkers. That's next. This is Joe Ostrowski on 670 The Score and the Radio.com app.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
Again, and Mitch said it yesterday at the end of the game, or I think he mentioned in his press conference with y'all, is that, you know, he did this. It was a very similar play, you know, and Anthony was running down the middle and we just missed it. And that's just like he said, you know, you got to complete that ball. And so when you're in those situations and a defense presents a certain look to you, you have to capitalize. And I think we saw one that capitalized, one play that did and one play that didn't. And again, I credit Mitch for understanding that and admitting that. And that's just part of the game. That kind of just goes into the gut feel as well as with yesterday, you know, with making plays. And that's just where we were at that time.
Voice of Bears head coach Matt Nagy, Joe Osho, Sports Radio 670, The Score. You're just joining us. The White Sox are out to a 1-0 lead in the wild card series against the Athletics. It's weird to say the wild card series. We're just used to the wild card game. I mean, the Twins. I mean, no matter what they do, no matter how many home runs they hit, Astros win 4-1. Houston took the lead late, three runs in the top of the. I mean, poor Twins. And they get so excited every year. Don't tell me about losing 16 in a row in the playoffs. It's now 17. Just pat them on the head. Give them a hug if you see any Twins out there. Jordan, did that make you happy because they're in the division and you probably don't like them and you think about maybe the Morneau era, or do you kind of feel bad for them a little bit?
You don't understand how frustrated and how angry and sad it made me as a White Sox fan to have to go to games consistently watching the Twins and Nick Punto.
So you love it. You love this.
Oh, I love
it. They can't do anything in the playoffs.
I love it.
Bad guy.
And their fans are getting cocky, too, on Twitter all year, especially after they, you know, the Sox struggled against them in that one series, and they were super cocky, and then especially to win the division.
They don't have anything up there. It's cold all the time. Their football team's in last place, as predicted by yours truly. They just want a little happy baseball. That's it. Timberwolves suck forever.
How bad do you think they feel?
Yeah, no. I mean, it's not great. It's not great up there. But I understand why White Sox fans hate them and the years when Ozzie was the manager with the Piranhas and all that stuff. I get it. But at this point, like, I kind of do feel for them just a little bit. Sorry, guys. I do feel for them just a little bit. Two games going on right now. The Rays lead the Blue Jays 1-0. They are in the seventh inning, and we are underway with the Yankees and Indians. Yankees out to a 2-0 lead. They'd scored twice in the first inning. Aaron Judge with a two-run bomb, 390 feet in that game against Cleveland. Yeah, I couldn't make a pick on that one. So Judge takes Bieber deep. That's tough. That one will... That's a series that would have been a great DS matchup. And I wouldn't have complained if it was a CS, and we get it here in this wild card round because of the Yankees' issues with their record, as they just barely got in. Joe Osho, Sports Radio 670, The Score. Okay, I teased you by telling you that Matt Nagy is playing chess while everybody else is playing checkers, and I truly believe that. Like, I don't know if Matt Nagy's a great play caller. I don't know if he's a great head coach right now. I think we'll get a lot of those answers here in year three. Year one was great. Everything went their way, including the turnovers on defense. Mitchell Trubisky, his best year, obviously. And he thought things were on the up and up. Only get better. Maybe not 12 wins again, but they're definitely going to be in the playoffs. Didn't work out that way in year two. And a lot of questions were raised. But keep in mind, he had to deal with 10. He had to game plan around 10. And I'm sure, and there were a lot of things that he couldn't do that he wanted to do with this offense. So when you start to think about the timeline, you know, sometimes you hear people say, got to play the long game. He's playing the long game. I kind of feel that, like that with Matt Nagy right now. And I don't think he was ever on the hot seat unless they were to win three or four games, and that's clearly not going to be the case this year. So he's safe. Even if they repeat 8-8, I still think that Nagy is safe. But if you go back to when he was hired, how did he get the job? Well, the second half of the year, he took over play calling duties from Andy Reid, and the offense was terrific. Now, playoff game, not so much, but he learned under Andy Reid. We know about the Reid coaching tree. Sits down, has the interview with Ryan Pace, and he convinces Pace, look, I know this year wasn't great, but he had John Fox and Dow Loggins. I will fix Mitch. I will bring some of the things that you saw with this Kansas City team to Chicago, and the Bears will have a good offense for maybe the first time ever. Like, it's scary when you look in the record book and you see Eric Kramer, 1997, leading so many categories. So he convinces Pace to hire him. I will fix Mitch no matter what. Year one, perfection, man. 12-4, defense can't stop forcing turnovers. Khalil Mack, superstar, awesome. Then the playoff game happened and they couldn't score points at the end of the year. And in that playoff game, not enough. And Nick Foles takes him down. And then Trubisky's terrible last year. Body language would tell you that Nagy wanted to remove Trubisky from multiple games, but the general manager never gave him a realistic option. When Chase Daniel's the guy, you can't make that move. You can't say that Chase Daniel gives us a better chance to win. Some believed that. But that's going a bit too far. That's going 0 to 60. And even me, who never felt that Trubisky could play, ever. That was a tough putt for me. Like, no, Trubisky's better than Chase Daniel. He's a better option. He has these flash points, and we've seen him be unbelievable. And then it's just the layups that he misses on again and again. But, so Nagy, after last season, had enough. He was done with the guy. You can just tell. So what does he do? He's looking at the landscape of free agents or quarterbacks he believes will be available. And he targets Nick Foles. That's his guy. Bad situation in Jacksonville. I think he's going to be available. That's my guy. Now, he didn't tell anybody this, but that's what he figured out. Fired a bunch of offensive coaches as soon as the season ended. And everybody he brought in had connections to the quarterback he targeted, Nick Foles. Everyone. So then they get together and they're figuring out what to do. What do we do at quarterback? Got to have some competition. And Pace is even willing to admit that. His guy. We'll have competition. He's thinking, I'm not going to bring in someone to take the job from my guy, Mitch Trubisky, because maybe it finally happens. We hear your silly comps like, oh, Drew Brees took time to develop too. Okay.
So he gets a consensus. But he knew he was going to get this consensus with the coaches because the coaches he brought in all worked with Nick Foles, and they love Nick Foles. He probably told them beforehand, like, hey, you want Nick Foles here? Would you like to work with Nick Foles? Yeah. All right, cool. You're in. You're in. Everybody's in. Hey, Pace. Come on. We had to deal with your guy last couple years. Can I get my guy? Can I get my guy for right now? We haven't drafted. You've drafted one quarterback in all the years as a general manager. Let me get a guy. At least until we get the next guy. Okay? Can we do that? Sure, Ryan, but, you know, let's give Mitch a fair shot. Let's have a quarterback competition. Okay. So he convinces Pace to go get Foles. And he needs to have this positive working relationship with Pace. So he agrees, okay, he gets one more shot. We'll give him one more shot. And hey, it's Detroit week one. We're not scared of their defense. Mitch has been very successful against the Lions. Week two, Giants defense stinks. Week three, the Falcons are terrible. Sure. Let's do one more chance. Because Ryan, you know, if he can't do anything against these defenses, all our questions will be answered. And then it happened. Nagy proved to Pace, he proved to everyone watching, listen, if you were holding out hope, it's not happening, guys. And he was able to get Trubisky out of there without losing a football game. That's amazing. He got him out in week three. Before the Colts game, before the Bucs are coming up in prime time, without losing a football game. Timing was perfect. He gave him nearly an entire half against a team that falls apart again and again. A team that was losing all these defensive players, their young cornerback, he's out with COVID. Julio Jones is down. And they give it up. And they don't learn from their mistakes. They don't run the football when they're supposed to run the football and run clock. So he gave Nick Foles an entire half. And he's great in that role coming off the bench as a relief pitcher. I've got to give it up to Matt Nagy. The way he played this, man. Chess versus checkers, man. I don't know how you look at it any other way. We'll find out if he's a real good head coach this year. But what I do know is the Bears are 3-0, and Mitchell Trubisky's not the QB1. He'll probably start again. They're gonna need Trubisky at some point this season because history tells us that Nick Foles will not be able to stay healthy for an entire campaign. But Nagy didn't want Trubisky out there. He met his GM halfway and said, yeah, cool, okay. We'll let him go one more time. Pace got his way. See, Ryan, we tried. We tried it your way. Now we got to try my way. And he didn't give Pace an option because he did it in the middle of the game. And what Foles did on the field on Sunday, you can't go back to Trubisky in week four. Hands are tied. Ryan, I mean, listen, I looked over the tape. I talked it over with the coaches. How's the team going to react if we go back to Trubisky after what Foles just did in Atlanta? What a job. I got to give it up to Matt Nagy. I hope he's a great play caller. I hope he's a terrific coach. But the way he played this long game, man, what do you know? Ryan Pace is playing checkers. Matt Nagy is playing chess. Oh, amazing. Just beautiful. Beautiful. If you want to text it about that, 312-644-6767, 312-644-6767. I'm on Twitter, at Joe0670. Coming up next, let's get back to the White Sox. The host of the Sox Machine podcast, my buddy Josh Nelson, will jump on. I know he's got to be thrilled after a White Sox winner today going up in the Wild Card Series 1-0 over Oakland. Josh joins me next on 670 The Score and the Radio.com app.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
A lot of excitement, a lot of energy, you know, on the field and, you know, in the dugout as well. You know, every pitch mattered, like I said. And, you know, every guy was into it today. And, you know, was able to scratch away to win. And, you know, hopefully we keep that same momentum.
Tim Anderson, 3-for-4 today, a double, a run scored in the White Sox victory over the Athletics. One win away from moving on to the DS. Joe Osho, Sports Radio 670, The Score. We now bring in into the show my buddy, Josh Nelson. He hosts the Sox Machine podcast. Follow him on Twitter at Sox Machine underscore Josh. I mean, Josh, it would be simpler for Oakland if they would just listen to TA. I can't get past this, man. I give the credit for the Sox for pulling out this victory and what they were able to do playing long ball against Oakland. I know he's a respected manager, but how the hell do you throw out a left-handed pitcher against the Sox? It's not a fluke that they were 14-0 and now 15-0 against left-handed starters. Every offensive category, they're right there at the top of baseball. I don't get it, man.
Yeah, Bob Melvin's going to have a tough time with the Bay Area radio shows in the morning, questioning his decision-making, not just to have Jesus Luzardo start the game, but for Luzardo to face Tim Anderson and Jose Abreu a second time. And when they announced that Luzardo was the starter, Joe, I thought it was a trap.
In the sense that
Rick Renteria could be stacking a lineup, put all your right-handed hitters on the top to take advantage against the left-handed starter, and then after two innings, whoops, we're going all right-handed for the rest of the game. And that puts you in a pretty tight spot because the White Sox obviously are not as successful against right-handed pitching as they are against left-handed pitching. But that didn't come to fruition. They really wanted to test the young Jesus Luzardo, who's got a great arm. You don't find too many lefties in the game of baseball, Joe, especially from starters who throw 96, 97. But the decision on 2-0 to throw a center cut fastball to Jose Abreu is something that is going to keep Luzardo up at night, especially tonight, because that really gave the White Sox a comfortable lead, 3-0. And that's all really Lucas Giolito needed today because he was outstanding.
We'll get back to the analysis of the game and looking forward with Keuchel on the bump tomorrow for game number 2. But let's remove your work for SoxMachine.com. Let's just talk about this as a fan growing up as such a big Sox fan. And it's been so long since you've seen your team that you think about 365 a year, man. What was that like for you sitting at home, I assume, in 2020 and just seeing your Sox on the field when it matters for the first time since 2008?
At 10:30 in the morning, I got really nervous, Joe. Like, out of the blue, I had butterflies in my stomach, and I did not know why. And it was breaking my concentration preparing for our pregame and covering the game. And it's a good feeling to have. It's like a forgotten feeling. Like, for sports fans, we all have the butterflies in our stomach, and we get really excited for a big game. I mean, Bears fans have felt it. Blackhawks fans have felt it, especially during the Stanley Cup run. And even Chicago Cubs fans during the 2016 run. And some Cubs fans tomorrow morning, they're going to get those butterflies in the stomach too, waiting to watch game one. But when you've had such a long postseason drought, like the White Sox have had, I mean, I've got people tweeting at me that, hey, I was 7 years old the last time the White Sox made the postseason. And making you feel incredibly old. Like, come on, man. And, you know, now they're 19 and they're in college and they're kind of the age group that I was the last time the White Sox made the postseason in 2008. It's been such a long time. And I didn't know on how this young White Sox roster would handle being the postseason for the first time. I know Jose Abreu's a veteran, but this was his first playoff game. And with him and Tim Anderson and Lucas Giolito, they nailed it. And just from an analysis standpoint, I feel really good about the White Sox chances to win tomorrow, having Dallas Keuchel on the mound. And you may see if that does come to fruition, the White Sox going to the American League Divisional Series. you're going to see White Sox fans get really hyped up and maybe start believing that, yeah, this team could have a deep postseason run in 2020. It'll spark even more memories of what we had in 2005.
Lucas Giolito. He's taking a no. He already gave you a no hitter this year. And now we're in the playoffs and people are questioning, oh, I don't know if you can trust Lucas Giolito. This is the first playoff game in his career. Yeah. Well, look on the other side. The Oakland decides to go with a lefty. He's 22 years old and a rookie. But nobody thought he was going to take a no into the seventh.
Well, he had a perfect game going into
the seventh.
He was terrific today, and he did something that we did not see in the regular season. Lucas Giolito threw more sliders than changeups. So he had 100 pitches today, 54 were fastballs. And a typical Lucas Giolito starts, if he throws 100 pitches, 40 of them are going to be changeups, and then the other six pitches are attempts to throw a breaking ball, either a curveball or slider. But he and James McCann had a clear game plan, probably anticipating that Oakland hitters, looking at film, were sitting back waiting for the changeup. And instead of that, he was throwing sliders. And that really kept the Oakland hitters off balance. And I think was a big contributor on why Lucas Giolito was so successful. Yes, he did allow somewhat hard-ish contact in the early innings. But when you have Lourdes Garcia in left field, and you got Luis Robert in center field, and you got Adam Engel in right field, that's a lot of athleticism in the outfield defensively that can cover a lot of ground, where there's a lot of ground to cover in Oakland. And that defense alignment really worked out well for Lucas Giolito. And then he hit another gear, and he was able to get into the eighth inning. And even though he ran into a little trouble, he left the game with runners on first and third and no outs in the eighth inning. The White Sox had a four-run lead. Like, there wasn't ever at a time where there was a great concern that Lucas Giolito was going to melt down and blow up and the White Sox were going to lose game one. I didn't have that feeling at all. And it was probably one of the best postseason performances by any Chicago White Sox starting pitcher in franchise history, which is saying a lot because it's a long history, but it's also a very short postseason. But it ranks up there with what we saw in 2005. And we saw some pretty outstanding starts from the White Sox starting pitchers in 2005. And Giolito, he's got to be a static man. For that to be your first postseason start in your career, and you turn out that performance, man, I hope that fuels him for his next start, which I hope is going to be in a divisional series, either against Houston or Minnesota.
When Rick Renteria went out there,
yeah,
did you have the same? I think you did. I was going to say, did you have the same reaction I did? Because I was talking to my television out loud, watching the game by myself. I said, just don't do something stupid, whatever you do. Did you do that?
He pulled it. Yeah. When he went out there, I thought he was going to pull what I call an Ozzie. Ozzie Guillen did this all the time. He would go out there, talk to his starter, hype him up. You good? Okay. And then left. Like, to give him kind of like a physical vote of confidence that I believe that you can get through this inning. I think when Renteria went out to the mound to talk to Giolito, he made it very simple. Listen, I'll let you go, but if you give up another base runner, I got to take you out. And sure enough, Giolito gives up a single, runner goes from first to third, and Renteria kept his word and went to the bullpen. But I'm okay with that decision. I know there are some critics right now that say that maybe Giolito should have not came out in the eighth inning. Maybe Renteria should have pulled Giolito after the walk. Listen, you're up by four runs, and Giolito's your ace, and he hasn't hit the 100-pitch mark yet. And I know that things can get out of hand, but for someone like Lucas Giolito that has proven time and time again, especially in 2020, that he can get through this, I think Giolito needs those moments to demonstrate that, yes, I can get through the eighth inning, even though I'm approaching 100 pitches, and I want this. And when it comes to baseball teams and the aces want to die on their shield, and they want that opportunity to do so. They don't want to walk a guy, come out, and then the White Sox bullpen melts down when they felt like, man, if you left me in, I could have thrown a slider. it would have been a ground ball. We got a double play, and we'd be in a different situation. So I'm okay with Renteria coming out and letting Giolito know that if you let another base runner on, I got to take you out. But at least he gave Giolito that opportunity to prove his mettle and the opportunity to get through the eighth inning. But Giolito today didn't get it done. Renteria still had the quick hook, and it didn't cost the White Sox.
That's right. Joe Ostrowski here, 670 The Score, my guest. Josh Nelson, host of the Sox Machine podcast, at Sox Machine _ Josh. What do you think about Aloy? We hear about the foot sprain today, had some discomfort, but he's on the playoff roster. Hopefully it wasn't too big of a setback here. He's on this playoff roster for this round. Do you think we're going to see him tomorrow?
I do think we'll see him tomorrow. The question is, in what capacity? Is he the left fielder or is he the DH? I'm okay if he's the DH. And then you run the same outfield that you ran today with Lourdes Garcia in left field, Luis Robert in center field, and Adam Engel in right field. I wouldn't be expecting much offensively from Adam Engel and Lourdes Garcia against game two starter for Oakland, Chris Bassitt. But again, the athleticism, they're going to be defensive upgrades for you in those corners. And you can allow Luis Robert to roam in center field and run down every ball that's hit out there. I'm okay with that. And Jimenez can just focus on hitting. And I understand that the foot is going to be an issue. If he hits one of the gap, we're all going to be holding our breath as he strolls into second base or he tries to go from first to third. My game plan for him would be just hit homers and walk around the bases. That'll make things a lot easier for you. But I do think the White Sox need Jimenez's bat. And I think the reason he didn't play today is because Renteria was really set on having Yasmani Grandal in the lineup with James McCann, and he really likes the McCann and Giolito pairing, and I foresee that sticking throughout the rest of the postseason. But he wants Grandal's bat in the lineup. It worked out today. He had a solo shot because Grandal works the counts, and he gets on base. And I think it's okay that Jimenez did not play game one, but I do expect Jimenez to be in the lineup tomorrow. Again, the question is he the DH or is he left fielder? My vote would be have him DH.
Over on PointsBet, Josh, the Athletics are favored tomorrow. Game two with Bassitt on the mound. The A's are -125 favorites. The Sox with Keuchel +105 underdogs. What's your feeling about tomorrow?
105. The Oakland Athletics are not good against left-handed pitching. I think Dallas Keuchel is going to carve up Oakland. And this is going to be a repeat where you're going to have athletic fans bite their fingernails because they haven't scored a run, and it's now the seventh inning again. I'm expecting Dallas Keuchel to pitch at least six scoreless innings. Now, if you're doing prop bets and you're looking at Keuchel's strikeout total, I don't think it's going to be that high. But Keuchel's going to really frustrate these Oakland hitters. I'm expecting a lot of ground balls from the Oakland hitters. And he's not going to walk these guys. And if Oakland's not walking, they're not all that great offensively. So I would take the White Sox. I mean, if they're the underdog at 105, I would take them. If you want some juice, if you want to turn up the odds, I'd probably take the White Sox at -1.5 and increase your odds as far as that bet. That's the play that I would go. I would add more juice. I am far more confident in the White Sox winning game two than I was today in game one. And especially if they follow the same script against Chris Bassitt tomorrow, I think the White Sox could win by 2 or 3 runs.
Beautiful. See, I don't even think you need to do that for the extra juice. I'm looking, they're doing another boost tomorrow, Josh. You can get the Sox +125 straight up. That's a good play.
That's what I got today with a points bet. I also got the Jose Abreu home run prop bet.
Did you?
That was +285. So a nice little shot there in the arm as far as the bets. Home run wise tomorrow against Bassitt, I would go with either Eloy Jimenez or Abreu again. Both Abreu and Jimenez, fun fact, were better against right-handed pitching this year than left-handed pitching. So if you want a White Sox player to hit a home run, whether in daily fantasy sports or prop bets, I would go with either Jimenez or Abreu.
Excellent. Love it. Do you have any futures alive for any teams?
Oh, yeah. I got San Diego Padres plus 45 before the season started. I have White Sox plus 35. I hopped on the Reds bandwagon. I know you've been talking about them. I got them at plus 3,300.
All right.
So I'm looking good. Cubs fans don't want to hear this. I did put some money on the Marlins because they're in the playoffs now, and they've never lost a playoff series in franchise history. It's an incredibly small sample size, but it's 2020. We're in chaos. I just watched Shane Bieber throw four pitches, and he's already down 2-0. So why not throw some money on the Marlins? I think the Cubs should win that series, but just chaos. I have some money on the Marlins. But I do want to brag for a second. I did put money on Trey Turner to lead the league in hits. That hit. And I did put money on Jose Abreu to lead the league in RBIs at plus 40-1. And those both cashed. So I'm doing well with the baseball bets in 2020.
The market, man, it still does not respect Jose Abreu. How is he 40-1 after last year? How?
Yeah, did not. But you know what? I am thankful. So thank you.
What were the Turner odds?
That was 20-1. Yeah, I had most hits for Turner, and I had most hits for Anderson. And Anderson was right there. If he didn't miss 10 games, Anderson could have won. Anderson was 25-1, and Turner was 20-1. And I only put money on Turner because I wrote a column for Sox Machine looking at last year's numbers for the last 60 games of the season. And Trey Turner led the league in hits. So I was kind of shocked that he was at 20-1 odds. I would figure that the Vegas sports books would have looked at that before setting the odds. But I was able to take advantage of that.
Good calls, Josh. I hope we see a White Sox Reds World Series. I'd be very happy.
I saw your bet. buy me a beer. If that happens, just buy me a beer.
I'm already in with both teams to win the World Series, and I was thinking, you know what? Let's just go all the way in. So I found a World Series matchup, White Sox and Reds, 119-1 today.
I've been hearing rumors that White Sox Padres is an incredibly popular World Series bet right now.
I may have made that one too.
Yeah.
not a great number. It was in the 40s. Not a great number.
Exactly.
But yeah. But I was like, okay, I think it's going to be the Padres or the Reds. So why not?
I mean,
let's get the White Sox.
119-1. You put a nickel on that puppy. I mean, as soon as you get some vaccines going, you're going to have a very nice vacation with the family or just you and your wife to go and rent out an island for a week.
Listen, if the White Sox win, please. You saw the first wager at PointsBet in the state of Illinois, yours truly.
Yeah.
I mean, there's going to be a party. I might have to call off for a week. Or maybe they'll just know that I'll be gone for a week. And you'll be invited. Josh Nelson, Sox Machine. Check out his podcast. Subscribe. Follow him on Twitter at @SoxMachine_Josh. Thanks, Josh. Enjoy tomorrow and the rest of the postseason.
Yep, absolutely. Thank you so much, Joe.
That's Josh Nelson. Very, very excited. And some of the texters are chiming in. Like, boy, Josh is jacked. Yes, he is. And he has every right to be. So do all of you Sox fans. Coming up next, David Ross had some interesting things to say about his decision to go with Kyle Hendricks in Game 1 instead of Yu Darvish. We'll take a listen to what Rossi had to say next. I'm Joe Ostrowski on 670 The Score and the Radio.com app.